From Southside to the world, and in association with Middlesbrough Library Services, it's the Book of the Month with Jill Appleton.
For February, we have been reading another offering from one of Southside Broadcasting's favourite authors, Ian Lennox. The book we have chosen is called The Net, and is a revealing insight into the darker side of football. The main character in this book is football chairman Maurice Oakesley. Oakesley is a shrewd businessman, having discovered at the age of 17 that his father's antique business was a front for a brothel. He soon learned that in business no one can be trusted. In his first year at Rovers, a chance conversation brought to light how corruption amongst the football agents had done him out of $2 million. From then on, Oakesley made sure he had control of all the strings and nothing got past him with regards to the club.
Oakesley fancied he could smell the lingering tang of Dettol as Miss Frobisher left his office with a back as straight as a guardsman on parade. Perhaps she had cut herself. Perhaps she used the stuff as scent. Oakesley found the thought attractive. "You don't want me here?"
"Pardon?"
Oakesley looked up from his desk and stared at the back of the former SAS man who was standing by the window looking down at the pitch. Joey was in his early 30s. Just under 6 feet, stocky and fit. There was something about him that Oakesley found intimidating. He moved in short, quick steps and seemed aware of everything around him. As Oakesley watched and waited, he realised that Joey was in fact looking at him in the reflection of the glass. Joey turned to face him. "You're like lots of important people. You don't bother to hide your emotions. Why would you?"
Is there a point to this?"
Oakesley rose slowly from his seat. Joey turned and looked across the broad oak desk at the chairman. He noted the pale, long face and the grey hair brushed back. Oakesley was tall, but had started to hunch at the shoulders. Joey said, "Tell me to go, and I'll go." There was a silence for a second. Oakesley met Joey's hard stare.
"I don't like people being foisted on me."
"So why let me come here in the first place?" He answered his own question. "Soulsby's got something on you, hasn't he?" It was more an accusation than a question. Oakesley kept his eye contact with Joey. "I can't trust you. You're with Soulsby." "No, I'm not." Oakesley stared at Joey. "Don't be ridiculous. You're working for him. For him, not with him. He says you're a hard man who can make problems go away. He says I need you. He was very insistent about that." "So? So I don't trust you. Why should I? I tried to kill him once." He watched Oakesley's face open in shock. "It was in Iraq. He almost got me and my mates slaughtered." Joe waited for Oakesley to react. He didn't. "The Iraqis got him first." "And now you're working for him?" Joey nodded and spoke in a slow, deep voice. "He sought me out. With Soulsby, you play the hand you're dealt, and then wait. I suspect we're on the same side. We just don't know it yet."
"And why should I believe that?"
"We have mutual acquaintances." "I doubt that. Toby Stanton." This time Oakesley tried, but failed to keep the shock from his face.
"You know Stanton?"
Joey grinned. "Strange world, eh? Toe rag like me. I never inferred that."
"You thought it?"
"No, no, no." Oakesley shook his head. "My father worked his way from the streets, for Christ's sake." There was a silence between them, and then Oakesley said,
"How did you meet Stanton?"
"His son was a Rupert."
"A what?"
"An officer." "He's dead." Oakesley waited for Joey to elaborate. Joey kept him waiting and then said, "Traffic accident. Ironic, eh? I went to the funeral with some of my mates. So did half the cabinet. Toby came across to me. He said he felt humbled to discover that his son was so respected by his men." Joey gave Oakesley a long stare. "Tell me, Maurice, did you meet Soulsby through Stanton?"
"Not initially."
"What does that mean?" "I met Soulsby at an embassy party. However, he was often a guest at Stanton's country weekends." "What's the connection?" "Soulsby was at school with Stanton's son."
Joey Smith is ex-paratrooper and SAS. His body is a weapon and he takes no prisoners. When a fellow serviceman, Mark Soulsby, contacts him out of the blue, and offers him a job as a football agent, he is more than slightly suspicious. However, as his fortunes have taken a turn for the worst, he accepts the job. When one of Oakley's players gets himself mixed up with a local gangster, Soulsby brings Joy in to deal with the situation and into contact with Oakley. Joy and Oakley soon realise, however, that this was not a chance meeting and Soulsby had brought them together for another purpose. It is then up to Joy to find out what that is and put an end to it before Soulsby can put an end to them.
Charles Dernier was a large, loud man who was resplendent in a pinstriped suit, a glaring yellow tie and a gleaming silk shirt. He had chestnut-coloured hair brushed back in a wave. His face was tanned and his eyes were the colour of dark olives. His teeth were unnaturally white when he smiled. To many, he cut an impressive figure. To Joey, he looked like a man who spent too much time in front of a mirror. Soulsby had told him that Dernier was the agent for Alain Besson, a striker Rovers were seeking to sign. Joey's role had been to assist the Frenchman. Joey didn't know why Soulsby was so anxious for the deal to go through, and he didn't ask. Dernier had booked in at the Grand, a six-storey, five-star Gothic building with swing doors and ushers dressed like South American generals. Well-named, bloody place is a grand a night, near enough. He spoke English as well as Joey could speak French. Joey didn't tell him he could speak French. Dernier laid his long leather overcoat over the side of a settee in the spacious reading room. He looked at Joey, noting the stocky body, the plain black leather jacket, and the off-the-peg trousers. Been in the business long? No. Ah, Dernier's face gleamed with interest. Joey knew what he was thinking. A rookie. He kept his face passive. It was a trick he'd learned to do before he attacked people. This time, he forewent the pleasure. Dernier made a steeple of his hands before reaching into his travel bag and bringing out a sheaf of documents. I've done the due diligence. I have my letter of authorization from the club. Alain wants to come. So, we should wrap it up pretty quick. The lawyers? My side of the water. I've got a guy in Paris and another down in Monaco. Two lawyers? One of them is representing the player. He gave a broad wink. I always deal through my Paris lawyer. If there is ever a paper chase, it will come from your end. Joey smiled. Hardly. The chairman and the manager are both getting a wedge. Dernier laughed. I'm sure. Joey glanced through the documents. Nothing had been changed from the facts he'd received the previous week. 2 million gap, eh? Dernier nodded. As you are happy with £6 million, Rovers are willing to pay £8 million. The money goes to an intermediary account, and then fiff! Dernier laughed his loud laugh. His teeth gleamed. Joey noticed that women kept glancing at the big, handsome man. Joey settled back and waited for the show to begin. Soulsby had taken the addresses of both lawyers a week ago. Joey almost felt sorry for Dernier, who obviously viewed him as some sort of country cousin. Monsieur Dernier was between a very big ship and a very large quayside, and the tide was coming in. Soulsby had said as much, and he was never wrong on such matters. Dernier ordered some tea with an imperious wave of his hand. The waiter was a veteran. Joey suspected he'd assessed Dernier's emptiness at a glance. However, the sir, as he approached, gave nothing away. Dernier paused until the waiter left them. Logan, he said. He's a goner? On his way. Normally, Dernier was a man who kept his plans to himself, but the prospect of a lucrative deal was too much. He sighed and leaned forward. We can't, get involved? A consultancy fee? No. Joey shook his head, trying to give the impression that this was the first time the thought had crossed his mind. They could put us down for consultancy work and split the money. It's too far down the line. The waiter approached soundlessly across the five-star carpet in the five-star room, and the silver teapot shivered on the silver tray as he laid it to rest. He made to pour, but Dernier waved him away impatiently. Oh, really? He had no doubt that he could have got involved. Joey hesitated. It's the chairman. He wants Logan out yesterday. Joey reached for the teapot. Milk and sugar? Dernier refused to let go. What's the gossip on Logan? He plays for England and shags for the World 11. Dernier laughed. He reached into his jacket pocket. Wonder if he's got an address book like this? He flicked through the pages before replacing it in his inside pocket. Joey tried to hide his disdain and failed. I rather think he had a mobile with a big memory. That too, Dernier dismissed him, his vanity intact, and his teeth flashing in a false smile. Joey wondered whether Dernier had any substance. He suspected the answer was no.
Having always considered football to be the beautiful game, the net made me think that ugly would be a better description. The book looks at corruption amongst agents, clubs and managers, money laundering, leaks to the press, human trafficking, plus a lot more, as well as revealing a lot about how football works. There is also a thrilling storyline. If you enjoy a good thriller and if you're interested in football, this could certainly be the book for you.
Book of the month. More than a podcast, greater than a radio show. Quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened, with Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse, and every so often, some extremely lovely writers.
I wanted to find out from a real solicitor what happens when you let your insurance company look after your car accident claim. So I spoke to Charles Affer of Affer & Co.
Insurance companies make money from selling your claim to their own legal people. If you want solicitors who you can speak to face-to-face, someone who worked to achieve the best possible offer of compensation, you're better off choosing someone you know.
Someone you know? That sounds familiar, Charles.
Choose the one you know, Abba and Co.
Call 01642-225-75 or text ADVICE to 81400 now.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential elderly and residential EMI service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334. That's 01642 223334. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
Pharma Nord is the chemist to call for your nutritional needs. All of our products have been built on scientific research to help with your health. Pharma Nord can even help in such areas as senile dementia, strokes, and Alzheimer's. All our products are made in accordance with pharmaceutical standards and guidelines. And all our products are just one call away. Call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989. That's 01670 519989. Or visit pharmanord.co.uk. Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
When you suffer a road accident that's not your fault, it's easy to be persuaded to go along with your insurer's recommendations. But I spoke to personal injury expert Charles Affer about that.
In my opinion, phrases like, you have free legal cover with this policy, are meaningless. If the accident wasn't your fault, you've nothing to pay anyway. I think what your insurer may mean is, but we've already sold your claim.
And if I don't want to be sold, can I choose my own solicitor?
Of course. It's your right to choose what's best for you.
Choose the one you know.
Text claim to 81400 now.
Book of the month. More than a podcast, greater than a radio show, quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened with Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse. And every so often, some extremely lovely writers.
Quite right, too. One of those lovely writers is, of course, Rob Nichols, who's in the studio with us as well as being editor-in-chief of Fly Me to the Moon, the magazine, and so on. How are you, Rob?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent stuff. We've also got the legend that is Charles Arthur, ace solicitor extraordinaire, sponsor, all sorts of other bits and pieces. Charles, how are you keeping yourself?
Oh, I'm good, thanks.
Splendid. And Jill Prowse is here, but this time, because we didn't actually send her the book, we thought we'd send her to research. She could actually sort of sort out the things herself in all sorts of ways, which is brilliant. So let's turn to yourself first, Rob, because obviously a football man, key Middlesbrough follower and supporter, etc. What did you make of Ian Lennox's The Net?
A work of fiction. I was thinking as I was reading it and then watching a court case on TV with Harry Redknapp, and then seeing Rangers and Portsmouth going into administration, thinking there's no funny business in football whatsoever, is there?
No.
But no, it was really interesting, and obviously we know that when the Soviet bloc fell, there was a lot of problems in Eastern Europe, for instance, with organised crime getting involved in football, because there is a lot of awful lot of money slushing around, isn't there? And there's an awful lot of margin for error. So no, it was really interesting. Look, it was strange picking it up, and the person that you thought was going to be the main subject matter of the book immediately seems to make all the wrong decisions in his life. You think, what are you doing? You've just got a really good job. You've just got a really cool girlfriend. And then you decide to throw it all in. But that's just a sort of red herring, isn't it?
That was an interesting one for me, I think, certainly in terms of the journalist who we think is going to be followed through on that basis. Interesting from that point of view, whether, you know, given that Ian started off as a journalist himself, he was sort of following through that whole side of things there, the sort of Lennox area. Something we might like to think about. Jill, you did some research into this. What did you find about The Net on The Net?
Well, on The Net, I couldn't find a really good write-up on it, which was disappointing, because when I realised the book wasn't going to be in the post that day, I thought, right, I'll go online and see what I can find. Right. What I did find was people's opinions of it.
Yeah.
And it was interesting, because when I said to Charles when I first came in that one of the ones I read said that the writing and the actual standard of the writing in the first half of the book he felt was quite poor, but then it got better, and Charles actually said that that's something he found out.
So slightly off mic there, but that's it. So Charles, it's over to yourself, really. Do you think it sort of improved
I think it did. I enjoyed the second half much better than the first half. I've read the first half and thought, oh god, this is just not really very Geoffrey Archer-ish at all. But the second half it sort of zipped along a bit, but I didn't feel it was particularly well written, in that it didn't sort of zip along and had a pace. It was just a bit laborious, really. A bit like a sort of, I don't know, a bit like a third or fourth division team playing against, you know, someone in the Premiership. It wasn't quite Manchester United, I thought.
Okay, so kind of book of two halves is what you're saying. I had to mention it somewhere.
Yeah, I suppose it was a bit. I enjoyed it. It was, you know, it was, yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a good read, but it wasn't quite, it just didn't quite have that sort of zip, and it wasn't quite as... It was a bit unsubtle, I thought.
Mind you are a rugby player, aren't you? So pure, and rugby is so pure. We don't sort of work
certainly
into
is
all sorts of things. That might be. Jill, back to you to yourself again. How did you? Do you think this sort of thing? Because obviously the brothers, we raved about the brothers.
Yeah,
we thought
it
was fantastic.
Like
the brothers and the 60s man, etc. What did you make about the net in general? You stay with what you sort of, you think an enjoyable read, a thriller.
It was better than I expected, because I'm not really interested in football, as you know. So I thought, oh, I don't think I'm going to like this. But I did quite enjoy it. I didn't understand why we were talking earlier about the Bennett, was it, the journalist?
Yeah,
I didn't know why he was in it at all.
He just seemed to drift out. Did I miss something there?
Or
did
he just, and then he went.
He just disappeared, didn't he? And I was waiting for him to come back in some sort of, you know, some sort of pivotal sort of part in the story, but he just never did he?
Yeah,
he introduced us into the main character, really, didn't we, when you think about it?
Yeah.
But I was sort of reading and thinking, when's this going to happen? I was thinking there'd be some subtle twist, and then it would all fall into place.
He was coming out of the out of Heathrow, and then he was just knocked over, basically.
Yeah, that's right. We'd never heard of him again, and I was expecting him to come back
as a ghost.
You know, Geoffrey Archer's subtle twist in the end bit, and it just
subtle twist, Geoffrey Archer.
Well, all right. Yeah.
I didn't think there was a slight sort of contradiction in terms of it. Not to worry.
I just disappointed he didn't come back into it, because I was always waiting for this piece to fall in the jigsaw, and it just didn't.
So you'd like more from Bennett then?
Yeah, I quite like, when I first started reading it, it was talking all about Bennett, and I quite liked him as a character, and I wanted to know more about him, and then he just.
Oaksley and Joey.
He just disappeared, and he wasn't even killed off in a sort of dramatic way. He just sort of He just sort of went away.
I know, I think I was sort of skim reading it and I thought, oh, I think I missed a bit. Yeah. Oh, he's dead.
I felt a bit like that. I thought, oh, I was going back, what's up with this journalist? Yeah, and he just wasn't there. Yeah,
okay. Let's throw in a few scores then, et cetera. I mean, obviously, as a Middlesbrough fan, Rob, what would you go for this one for the next?
I'll go for 8.
8, okay. Jill?
I think I'll give it 7.
7, yeah, as in the classic Strictly Come Dancing scenario.
7.
Right, exactly. It's not fair to ask you, Jill, at this stage, because you...
No, don't ask me, Alex.
Fair enough, okay.
I'd give it a 6. I was just a little bit disappointed with it.
I'm going to go 8.5.
Oh, yeah.
8.5 or so. Primarily because you know the jingle which says every so often we have some extremely lovely authors.
Mm.
Online now, Ian Lennox, how are you?
Okay.
My goodness. Now, you've been listening to the team there. I didn't know where Charles was going to start off with respect to that one and a game of two halves. Any comments you'd like to make to start off with? And are we going to have more Bennett?
No, he's dead. Actually, in Bennett, that's one of the themes of the book is about power and how people use power. If you remember, Uxie's father, although a disreputable businessman, was very kind to people he had power over. Whereas Bennett, the more powerful he gets, the worse he becomes. And that's how he sort of... That was the theme of what I used him for, anyway. And also, he got in with Soulsby, as did Oxley, who was trapped by him, and he became one of the victims of Soulsby. So that was meant to be a warning of how serious the situation was for Oxley and Joey.
Hmm.
That's why the scenario with Bennett happened. I don't know really. I was interested to hear somebody talk about Europe in the 1990s and the fall of communism, because I was originally going to set it in modern day. But unfortunately, what happened was I was writing it, I had very much aware from writing The 60s Man how people refused to believe that the characters were fiction. And I thought, well, if I start putting, the guy in the castle, which is where I live and where in the area I know, and all sorts of people are going to say so-and-so. So I had to move him out of the area. And I also had to move the book in time, because at the time I was writing it, there were all the accountants going raiding clubs and things, and it looked very much as though I could, you know, writing a story one week and be completely out of date. Mm-hmm. Also, the type of agents that existed in the 90s were much smaller and less organised than the sort of companies that run these big people now. So I decided to put it into the 90s, which worked quite well for me, because it gave... Well, part of the theme of the book was that the Soulsby, the spy, was trying to get information from Eastern Europe during the fall of communism, which is quite a strong possibility that did happen, I would imagine. I think, there was changing regimes all the time, so people would be desperate to find out who would become the major players in Eastern Europe. So that gives a raison d'etre to it, which is why I said it in the 90s.
I mean, Rob Nichols is taking part in the One Big Idea Sports Middlesbrough Tees Pride event with local writers, and I do know that Jill is keen to feature yourself as well at the upcoming Middlesbrough Literary Festival. It's Jill Appleton, of course. But Rob, from your own point of view, I mean, I realise Middlesbrough fan, Newcastle fan could be a nightmare here. Any questions you want to put to Ian now?
No, well, I take the point about the Eastern European and the spying, because I know that... I've been in contact with North Korea, which is a similar sort of situation now as to the Iron Curtain then.
Yeah.
And when the North Korean party came over to Middlesbrough, they had a spy on board, spying on them and spying on us.
Yes, it would be.
And then also, when any trip goes across to North Korea from here, a football trip, there's often sort of... contact saying, keep an eye on, will you let us know what time the lights go off on a night and things like that, you know, will let us know how the electricity is and stuff, you know, from our point of view. So I agree, it definitely would have gone on.
Yes, oh yes, yes.
And
the interesting thing was, in the book there's a guy, a sniper, shoots, attempts to kill somebody from Prague Bridge.
Yeah.
And I wrote that as fiction, you know, and about 3 or 4 months later I was doing some more research, and I discovered that an Eastern European country had been warned, was trying to get into the common market, UEFA, not the UEFA, the common market, and was told that that one of the things was going to be a difficulty for them was the profusion of high-profile gangsters in charge of the football clubs. And a member of the government had apparently then set it upon himself to bump these people off. And one was a guy shot by a sniper.
And this is one of the things, because obviously, as a journalist, it started off with that before becoming a producer with Tyne Tees, etc. Did you find that your journalistic thing, in fact, I'll ask the question, was Bennett based on some of your own personal experiences at all?
No. I imagine. You never know, actually. It's strange to say this, but you just don't know until about 2 or 3 years after the book's finished whether you can look back and say, oh my God, there's a strand of him in there. Mm-hmm. But Bennett, I think, is probably a combination of a number of journalists I met. I didn't like Bennett as a person, actually. I thought he's rather...
He was a fool, let's face it.
Yeah, he was a fool, yeah.
He was a good writer.
Good writer, but still a fool. A foolish writer.
Well, maybe. But he wasn't satisfied with what he had. Never would be, I don't think, and he led to his downfall.
Charles, bearing in mind that, as you say, we always, as you can attest to, every time we're at Southside, we like to have a new surprise on the whole thing, and I don't think you'd expect it to be speaking to hear Lennox. Just goes to show you always be careful with those final marks, you see. Anyway, any questions?
I'd like to ask you, do you feel that football is still, has it cleaned itself up, or is it still sort of corrupt and full of brown envelopes sloshing around?
I think if you just look at the world in general and say, the more money there is, the more power there is. The more people are trying to grab it. Therefore, the more corrupt it gets.
I read Alan Sugar's autobiography when I was on holiday, and he was very interesting. His time at chairman of Tottenham,
yes,
and what he had to say about Terry Venables.
Yes,
and he's sort of safe stuffed full of used £50 notes, and Sugar was sort of appalled by all this, and he found it very difficult sort of culturally to run a business which had this sort of endemic sort of corruption to it, really. And I just wondered if things have changed since then, because that was 10-15 years ago, maybe.
I haven't done any investigative things into the present day, but I mean, if you only got to read the papers, every 10 minutes or something.
Yeah, like surely that. The £240 million that Glasgow Rangers have lost, these things can happen.
I mean, you know,
it's a matter of course. It's very, very casual. Ian, listen, it's been fabulous touching base with you, yourself. Thank you very much for actually joining us. Hopefully, you didn't find it too painful listening to the first part of the show. You can obviously listen to it again on podcast, etc. and offset it with the joy, obviously, of the other works and the brothers and a whole range of things. I know Jill does want to speak to you, so if you're okay, I'll pass on your details to Jill Appleton, and she'll talk about all sorts of other bits and pieces. I think a round of applause for Ian Lennox being good sports. Excellent. The book of the month will be back again next month. What are we talking about then, Jill?
Our next book is called Small Ireland by Andrea Levy.
There we are. All this and more on Southside Broadcasting. Book of the month.
Book of the month. More than a podcast, greater than a radio show, quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened with Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse. And every so often, some extremely lovely writers.